Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to Bottoming, the LGBTQ mental health podcast about rock bottoming and beyond.
Be sure to follow us on Instagram and Twitter at bottomingpod or visit bottomingpodcast.com for more content relating to each episode.
We've also added a support page to the website to direct you to the right place if you're struggling or need someone to talk to.
Thanks for listening, and don't forget to subscribe and review us on Apple Podcasts.
Hello, I'm Matthew.
And I'm Brendan, and our pronouns are he and him. It's been a while since we've said that, isn't it?
It has.
It's nice. 2 whole months.
Yeah, 2 months. This is a Mental Health Awareness Week special. Mm-hmm. And we are joined by the one and only Will Young.
Well, you know, I was ready to just like park the podcast, let's say that, park it for a bit. And not even doing a special or anything between now and the next season. And then we got a little email in our inbox from Will's team. And we were like, fuck it, let's do a little special.
Ride.
Let's ride.
We definitely needed that break though, didn't we?
Oh, yes. Yeah, yeah.
I think both of us really very much needed that break. And there's been a lot of changes and growth, some may say, since then.
Yeah, growth.
So it has been a while, but let's summarize. How have you been?
Yeah, good. Summary. It's been a big thing's changed, which was before we gave up before we ended the last season.
Well.
Who said, well, yeah, let's call a spade a spade. Before we gave up on the last season, I was talking about the research I wanted to do, and then since then we put out that little teaser episode asking for people to take part, and I was...
Teaser?
You hardly know her.
Don't even know her.
And not that. I was very, very nervous that I wouldn't get any responses at all. I was like, talking to my supervisor, I said, oh yeah, we've got all these listeners per month or whatever, and she was like, oh, you'll be able to get it, and I was just like, yeah, but you know... Who says they're going to be engaged listeners? Do you know what I mean? So I was nervous, but sitting here today on May 4th, may the 4th be with you, I've got all my participants, the research is closed, and I've got like 160 that I'll be able to use, which is 60 more than I needed. So I'm just incredibly grateful for everyone that took part. And already looking at the results, it's just very, very exciting. So mm-hmm. I'm very, very grateful.
And when are you expecting to share the research?
Well, I have to do my whole dissertation and I hand that in September. So
you are keeping the children waiting?
I'm keeping the...
Keeping them on the edge of the seats.
The kids on their toes, yeah. Also, I had a really gorgeous family holiday in Cornwall. Mm. Thank you. Goodbye. So what would you... How have you been?
Yeah, I've been really, really good, actually. I am 6 weeks maybe into my new job
now. Has it been that long?
Yeah, I think I'm in week six. I can't remember what state I was in when we left the podcast.
I remember
it wasn't... I remember it wasn't my highest point. Mm-hmm. I'd obviously had some time off sick, had started antidepressants, and do you know what? Honestly, I would say at this point, I feel like a whole new person. It has made such an enormous difference. So I actually, within myself, I feel very, very, very good. Mm-hmm. I feel a little bit flat today, but I think that's just because I'm all socialed out from the bank holiday weekend.
It was a very social weekend.
It was so social.
So social.
it was also mine and Sam's anniversary.
Aww.
So we had a gorgeous, gorgeous day in Margate that weekend, as well as all the other antics that we got up to. I'm good. I'm very, very good. And I am loving the new job. Mm-hmm. It is a whole new learning experience for me as well. There's so many incredible, like, global projects that I'm working across. It's really exciting. And I'm going to Rwanda in July.
Rwanda?
Rwanda? Don't even know her. No, too many. So I'm actually hoping to meet with some LGBT activists as well when I'm in Rwanda. Possibly for a future episode. So, yeah, all going really well.
I'm so pleased to hear it.
One thing you will likely notice if you follow us on Instagram... Mm-hmm. At Bottoming Pod, is we're not doing video content for this, and likely not in the future. Mm-hmm. And there's a few reasons for that, amongst other things. But as we've said, we, you know, left the podcast in
a state.
The start of the year. And on reflection, it was because of a huge imbalance in what was being done and who it was being done by, firstly. So aka Brendan did all of it, and it wasn't sustainable for either of us, the level of stuff that was being done. And we both love this podcast. It's been part of our lives for a number of years now. We are in each other's company all of the time, too much time if you ask me. we just wanted to get it to a level again where what we were doing we were able to enjoy, we were able to speak to people that we wanted to speak to, but without it becoming a chore. So I think moving forward, there'll be maybe a slightly different output. There is a gorgeous rebrand that Brendan has done.
Thank you.
Again,
thank you.
For that, for all of the stuff moving forward. But yeah, it just means things are a little bit different, but the episodes and the gorgeous conversations that we will be having will be the same.
Absolutely.
Just on the outside, we just look a bit trimmer.
Trimmer, slimmer, sexier. Never been hotter. Hot girl summer. So I agree with that. And I think it goes back to that episode we had over on burnout, which is always how we seem to end these seasons, with a bit of a big case of burnout. It's because we push ourselves to produce the best content we can with the people that we work with and with the skill set we've got together and what we share. And so what we wanted to do, and we got, me personally, I got into a state of like, each season it needs to get better and we need to do more and more each season, because people will either expect to see stuff, or I kind of also want to prove to myself that I am improving as well in certain areas. But like Matthew said, we do want to continue the podcast, and so we just needed to kind of reevaluate where we kind of spend our time and the core things of the podcast, so that in terms of its quality is where the attention needs to stay, and the rest we can work it out, and it's still going to look gorgeous. It's just a bit different.
Amen. So why are we here?
It's Mental Health Awareness Week.
It is Mental Health Awareness Week. So this year's Mental Health Awareness Week runs from Monday the 9th of May to Sunday the 15th of May, and it was originally formed by the Mental Health Foundation. This year's theme, if you have not seen already, is loneliness.
I didn't really know what to think of this theme initially because I think I've just been lucky enough not to feel lonely for a while now. So I think when I was kind of thinking it, I was like, oh, hadn't been in my thought pattern for a while. So I kind of didn't really know how we would talk about it or who we'd talk to for it. Luckily, Will offers some really, really good insight into to the conversation. But the government did a wellbeing and loneliness survey in 2020 to 2021 and found that 6% of people in England, which is approximately 3 million people, said they feel lonely often or always, which I think is just a huge amount of people.
Mm. And I imagine as well, there's also a lot of people there that weren't taking part in that survey. Mm-hmm. Because if people are lonely and often isolated, the chances of something like this reaching them is also going to be quite low. I mean, it's interesting that that was when the survey was conducted as well over the course of the mm-hmm. pandemic. The Mental Health Foundation conducted some research, and the report, Mental Health in the Pandemic, found that loneliness had been exacerbated during COVID and different lockdowns, which has contributed to higher levels of distress resulting from people's sense of isolation and that reduced ability as well to connect with others because it was such an enormous shock. Wasn't it the initial few months? And it's like every single person we've spoken to, pretty much every single episode, the pandemic has come up in one way or another. So yeah, I think, again, that sort of stat is not really that shocking, is it?
No, not anymore. Additionally, research from Just Like Us on growing up LGBT+ found that LGBT young people are twice as likely than their non-LGBT peers, 52% versus 27%, to have felt lonely and separated from the people they are closest to on a daily basis during lockdown.
And if you missed the episode that we had with Dominic Arnold from Just Like Us, make sure you go and give that a listen because that is a really informative episode.
Yeah.
About their research. So I think on the flip side as well, I've spoken about this in several different episodes, but when I was working at Tonic, so the LGBT affirming retirement community that opened in London last year, there is an enormous prevalence of loneliness in other LGBT people, and it was one of the reasons that the organisation was initially founded. Research from Age UK shows that older LGBT people are especially vulnerable to loneliness, as they're more likely to be single, live alone, and have lower levels of contact with relatives. And that's a common thing, especially with older LGBT people. A lot of their families are either not around anymore, are not supportive of them, typically less likely to have children. Mm-hmm. So it means that the friendship groups can also be a lot smaller, and that support network can diminish quite quickly. Mm-hmm. Some more research from Age UK on loneliness in older people more generally found that the number of over 50s experiencing loneliness is actually set to reach 2 million by 2025-26.
Wow.
This compares to around 1.4 million in 2016-17, which is close to a 50% increase in just 10 years.
That's mind-blowing.
But also, we've covered this in previous mm-hmm. episodes, social care and healthcare, social services in this country have been decimated by successive Conservative governments. And it just is, the way, it's always the less able that are impacted mostly. Mm-hmm.
But thinking about how to combat loneliness, Mark Rowland, the chief executive of the Mental Health Foundation, said, "Our connection to other people and our community is fundamental to protecting our mental health, so we must find better ways of tackling the epidemic of loneliness. We can all play a part in this."
And that is something that Will touches on, which is probably the best segue that we can give you into this wonderful interview that we had with Will Young, which for both of us was just an enormous gag because we both grew up mm-hmm. watching him on Pop Idol. One of the first like gay role models that I think either of us had. So yeah, a bit wild actually. Here is Will.
So first things first, congratulations on the release of your latest book. It's been mere days, I think, since it was released. Be Yourself and Happier, the A to Z of Wellbeing. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, it's been really fun, actually, talking about it. Because I've been talking about mental health for a long time, learning about mental health, well-being, physical health. It's all in the same area, mm-hmm. really. Mm. You know, I don't like just saying mental health, because I think we then ignore the body. It's actually, it's what I talk about a lot in the book. But there's for some reason, doing a book is kind of, I feel like I've got more clout or something. I don't know. It's weird. I haven't, even though I do like mental health talks and things like that, I feel like it's been so nice to have the opportunity to talk about all the stuff I've learned.
Mm-hmm.
You know, makes me feel quite wise. I quite like it. Yeah. I feel like the wise gay uncle. I'm already thinking about what I want to write about next. Mm. I think the thing is that a lot of the things that I talk about, I'm quite surprised that people haven't thought about it or discovered those things. But then I have to remind myself, well, I didn't know those things. So, I should, I don't judge people for it, but just simple little stuff like talking from the eye position, trying not to use the word but instead of and, just stuff like that. It's really like basic kind of rudimentary lessons that we can put into practice that genuinely make your life a lot easier.
Yeah,
they genuinely do. And then also talking about things like boundaries. What are boundaries? You know, we hear a lot of things like what's codependence, boundaries, what is it when someone gets triggered? You know, these are important things.
Mm-hmm.
What is trauma? How do you give advice? All those kind of, what do you do at Christmas time if you don't like your family? You know, all those kind of things. So it's sort of quite a mix in the book.
That's a big one, that Christmas.
Yeah. Well, that was a big question. I haven't been home for the last few years. I go home around the Christmas time, but not for Christmas.
I think you're quite good at boundaries like
that. Yeah, that's really helped me. One question I was going to ask, with this book, how was the process maybe different than previous writing you've done?
Yeah, I wrote a book on gay shame, and that was very different.
Mm.
More exploratory and more specific,
mm-hmm.
And using my own life as a kind of conduit for looking at how gay shame
mm-hmm.
would come about in my life. And so it was cathartic, surprising at times, probably a bit painful at times.
Mm.
This one, I still use my own experiences, but it's probably a little bit lighter.
Mm-hmm.
And I quite enjoyed sort of thinking, because it's an A to Z, I sort of get to the letter, whatever it would be for that day, and think, right, what's there for this? Yeah. And I try and make it fun, mm-hmm. the writing process. I don't want to feel like I'm a slave to it. So I do very little each day. I set myself, very few amount of words to write. And mm-hmm. then some days I might completely exceed it. And other days I might only write a couple of words and just think, oh, there's nothing there today.
Yeah.
But I think I enjoyed it. Yeah.
Yeah. I imagine it's quite different. This new book feels very, I don't use the word positive as in like the other one was a negative, but I think it's maybe more forward looking, isn't it? Kind of the positivity side of it. Which I imagine is a lot different as well.
Yes. And I think I felt frustrated actually that for the gay shame book, I mean, I did proffer up some of the processes I used to move through my gay shame, but there's really still not masses out there.
Yeah.
That's why I wrote the book in the first place.
Mm.
Yeah.
So on to other mediums. You are no stranger to a podcast.
Yes.
You are an OG co-host of Homo Sapiens, and you have just found a new series, The Wellbeing Lab. I think the tone's great. You're so welcome. You are not scary, which a lot of podcasts can be, and definitely not preachy either. Have you had any standout moments so far with the new podcast?
I think it's really interesting because when I started Homo Sapiens with Chris Sweeney, it was so different, the landscape then.
Mm.
but it wasn't that long ago. So it's been really, and that was amazing to do, and still goes on. I think it's just Chris now that does it. And I found during doing Homo Sapiens that I just was getting, to be honest, quite stressed trying to find famous people that would fit into an LGBTQ plus podcast. You know, I was just like, oh, stressing out. And I started feeling like I was becoming a bit disingenuous. So I wanted to focus more on mental health. So that's why I stopped hosting it. Standout moments and not famous people. I mean, if a famous person comes along and it's right, great. But it's just taken the pressure off because I can just look for experts.
Yeah.
And that's so much nicer. I'm not anti-famous people, but it's just really stressful, you know. So who have I really enjoyed? Well, the one about sexual withdrawal or sexual anorexia, that was quite interesting. I tried to tackle quite a few subjects that aren't, ironically, the sexy topics, you know, people don't really talk about, and particularly topics that might people that might come with even more shame. People often don't talk about sex in their relationships. They don't, you know, we're quite bad at it, I think, in this country. And so things like that, body dysmorphia, I wanted to talk about. Those have probably been the two standout ones. I thought the sleep deprivation guy was really good as well, actually.
Yeah, I listened to the body dysmorphic disorder one this morning and I just thought it was fantastic because was it Hannah, the PhD student you had on there? So knowledgeable. And again, like Matthew was saying, the tone of the podcast is so approachable that it doesn't feel like, yeah, like a scary subject matter that you have to kind of listen to in secret and not talk to any of your friends about it. Which I think you obviously bring that, which is fantastic. But I think you also spoke about your PTSD diagnosis and how that was like the, not like maybe the trigger or where you started to learn or open yourself up to learning more about the symptoms of things. And I thought that was a really interesting conversation.
Yeah. I mean, trauma, what trauma is, you know, our definition of PTSD has moved on a lot in this country. I mean, I had to be educated 8-9 years ago. You know, I thought it was just for soldiers. So that's definitely opened up a whole new realm of therapies that are more body-based because our bodies will store, you know, often if we're stuck in a sort of cycle of behavior, I think one of the problems is that things like therapies that concentrate on the mind, so cognitive behavioral therapy is very much like you train the mind, you train your thoughts, you know, even mindfulness and things like that, they're great, but they can avoid the body. And often if we're stuck in behaviors, it's actually driven by stuck energy in our body from a trauma in the past. And this is just science. It's actually not, you know, a weird thing. It's just, it's proven. We're not very good at releasing traumatic energy so we can remain in a fight or flight response. The light just came on behind me. Did you see that? If you're here, give us a sign.
Release the trauma.
Yeah, release the trauma. What are the lottery numbers? So I've been really interested in that and invested a lot of my time in that for myself. And it's a bit of a game changer, really. You know, because I think a lot of people can feel ashamed that they can't get there. You know, well, I'm not, because a lot of therapies, I think, can be quite shaming. Like, well, you're not getting your thinking right. But actually, it's like, if I'm on high alert in my body, my brain, it doesn't understand why I'm on high alert. So it's trying to find an answer. Often the body can drive the brain's thinking, you know? So some people think thoughts drive feelings. I'm actually more of the other school, that I think feelings can drive thoughts. So I try and calm my body. So like today, I've got my little Red Bull with me because I had a long car journey and I can relax my back with it. So it goes quite well with my outfit. And I've got a red band as well, which I need, I stretch so I sort of feel strength in my body. And they're just little things that I do on a daily basis just to keep me like in the moment, keep my body calm. Very simple. I mean, you know, it's just a plastic band and a ball.
Yeah. I think the physical side of it as well, people tend to forget a lot, especially if you're, for example, overworked or in a desk space, for example, you get so caught up or stressed in screen, phone, laptop, whatever, your body takes it all on and you forget, and like hours will pass by and then you finish your day and it all stays with you until it comes out in ways that you either can't control or don't want them to.
Yeah, and it can drive us into thought patterns that are only because our brain is a problem solving tool. It's just I always give an example of how I would sit, and if I'm sitting and obsessing about the fact that I need to change the paint color in my bedroom immediately, I'm like, this is it has to happen immediately. It's completely wrong. It normally means that I need to step back from that thought pattern and look at calming my body. Mm. And once I've calmed my body, I kind of look at my room again and I'm like, I don't give a shit what color it is.
Quite like it.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So like, it's a good tool for all of us. Look at our thoughts and our beliefs. When it's really heightened, it normally means it's being driven by something probably older than what's going on in the moment, probably a triggering of something from the past, because otherwise we don't really care. You know, we wouldn't be stressed because nothing really matters.
I think that's a nice way to look at it as well.
Definitely.
In terms of it's an older thing that's resurfacing.
It is, because it's had longer to be around. You know, in the moment, really, I don't get stressed about stuff, but if I'm feeling quite heightened energy, I call it activation. I write about that in the book. You know, adrenaline, adrenalized, flood of cortisol, then it's normally something from my past that's come up. Yeah.
So I told my mum that we were interviewing you and she was over the moon. She loves you so much, just like the two of us, obviously. And she was like, oh, I remember seeing him on... I think it was Gardener's World or something back in 2019.
Yeah.
And because she's a big gardener, she's got an allotment, she loves all that. And she was like, get him to talk about why he uses gardening and stuff like that. So I did look into it and I read an article that you use it to help your anxiety. Do you still garden?
Yeah, I was gardening all of yesterday. Apart from, I had to go up to Cambridge to do a talk. But I love it. I love gardening. I've been on Gardener's World twice, which I feel like, honestly, it's worrying that I see that as one of my greatest achievements. Like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
All the other stuff doesn't matter. Gardener's World, creme de la creme. I just love it. I actually, for me, it's very creative.
Mm-hmm.
Like my garden is kind of an extension of being an artist. So the way I do my garden, the colours, the plants I choose to plant, it's all about design. And I've got sort of little sculptures within my garden, and I love it. I think people are quite scared to garden because it comes with, I don't think it comes with a pretentiousness, but people are sort of scared to fail. But like, I don't really care about that, you know. I just think it's for me it's just a thing of beauty. It's the aesthetic that I love, but I do also love getting my hands in the dirt, and my whole family are gardeners. My mum's a garden designer, you know, and I used to garden when I was younger, so I just, it's always been in my blood, really.
Yeah, I guess it's kind of that that way of, like you're saying, with kind of grounding yourself in something, it's doing something with your hands. I think baking is a similar thing where, depending on how stressed you get in those situations, it can be quite cathartic because you are, say, kneading bread or something. Yeah. It's the process of kind of getting out of your head and into the actual work of it.
Yeah, it makes you very present. And it, I do find it relaxing. I talk, because I have a lot of pots outside the front of my house, I talk to so many people because of my garden out the front. Because one, I'm out there. Two, I'm a nosy bitch. And, you know, people might say, oh, I love your tulips, or I love that. And it starts a whole conversation. And I think that's what life's about. Like, I love people stopping and talking to me while I'm tending to my dailies.
So this episode is due out during Mental Health Awareness Week. This year's theme is loneliness. Are there any things that you found have helped over the years with different feelings of loneliness, whether that's you know, physically separated from people or feeling lonely surrounded by people. I imagine there's quite a lot in there.
Yeah, loneliness actually is an awful one. I'm trying to think if I wrote about loneliness in the book. I'm not sure if I did, actually. Maybe that was Freudian. I used to feel very lonely. There's a number of types of loneliness, I think. So there's a loneliness from ourselves when we kind of can sort of abandon ourselves, and that can create a sense of loneliness. There's a loneliness that can run throughout someone's life that will be to do with something in the past. So for years, I used to feel lonely. And I think that there can be a type of loneliness that is specific to gay men as well, actually.
Mm.
I often think about it and wonder if it's linked to gay shame, you know, or I think that that's definitely something to explore. But feeling lonely is awful because it can be like a sort of void that won't get filled, you know. So often we can be around people but still feel desperately lonely.
Mm.
It might not be getting in touch with people that will fill the loneliness that's in oneself, you know. So that's something to look for. And certainly for years I had it, and then it sort of went actually through therapy. It was amazing. But I think to combat loneliness in whatever form is to get in touch with people on a deeper level, normally a deeper emotional level, in a safe space. I think that then creates a sense of connection. That's really the opposite, isn't it, of loneliness? And so I think that is the key to combating loneliness, is finding an area of life. It can be online, it can be a forum, it can be one person, it can be listening to a podcast, it can be doing an interview like this. You know, it can be a group where you physically meet up, where you can share your vulnerabilities and your emotional state beyond "I'm fine" or "I'm just a bit tired." You know, I think that combats it. Yeah. The worst type of loneliness, I think, is a sort of sense of abandonment loneliness. And stick around. You know, that's certainly what I used to have. You know, that's like what I call a spiritual wounding, you know, and that's a tricky thing to fill. It's a tricky chasm to fill, but it can be filled. But I think often actually that can be driving, if there's sort of childhood abandonment in various forms, that can be driving that sense of loneliness that people have. Because we all want to be loved, really, don't we? We just want to be loved, we want to feel heard, and we want to feel safe. Those are the three things.
Yeah, that was the thing. I actually thought about, like, the word safety when you were talking about having that deeper connection. It may not be with a lot of people. It may be with one, two, three different people for a long period of time as well. But just having those really important relationships, no matter, like, how many or few you've got, it just provides that, I think, safety, like, psychological side of the safety, rather than, you know, having a group of 47 friends and actually not knowing them on anything deeper than...
Yeah,
the small talk side of things. So, yeah, I think the safety side of it is the thing that stuck out as you were talking then.
Yes, it's very important. Very important for that not to be, to not feel that someone is going to misuse any emotional information and vulnerability that is shared, you know, or discredit it.
Yeah.
When that happens, unfortunately. You ever feel lonely, you guys?
I don't think anymore. I think maybe I used to. I think when you mentioned about gay shame, or as gay men, it being a common thing, or could be a common thing, I think that's quite, that is most probably likely, because it is quite isolating when, say, you don't have representation, or you don't have know other people in the community, or know other people that are gay, and so you can feel isolating and lonely because you feel like you're the only one, especially in a world where it kind of feels like everyone else is against you. And I mean, luckily now in the world of social media, there's so many other people are being seen, and it's I'm incredibly grateful for that. But when, you know, grew up in the 90s and there was very little representation, so yeah, I guess back then I did. But yeah, you're right. I think feeling, the more I've kind of spoken to people, the more I've opened up, the more I've had conversations like this, like you said, it's definitely grounded me and helped me feel more a part of the community, which in itself is less lonely.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. I think I definitely did more so as a teenager. And I think just whether that's like a learning through situations that I've experienced when I was younger, I just was always very keen to like not surround myself with people that I couldn't interact with on that kind of deeper level. So throughout, basically from when I came out in like my mid-teens to now, I've never had an enormous group of friends. I've always had a handful, less than a handful of people that I actually feel on like that level of I guess trust. Like safety and trust, yeah. So I think, yeah, fortunately I've not felt that for a while. I think I've actually at certain times like been really eager for isolation almost, because I found stuff has just been moving far too fast and I've kind of disconnected from my own things, that I've just kind of been going too fast with things. So I think kind of in recent years it's been the opposite almost. But having, regardless of which direction it was going in, I think that core handful of friends has always been really crucial to me.
It's important to keep an eye out, you know, hearing you talking about sometimes, you know, wanting some isolation or, you know, particularly if we're sensitive people, we can pick up on other people's stuff and it, you know, it can fry us. And we need to have time for ourselves. You know, there's a lot of energy that people come with. They just do. Like, how can you tell there's been an argument in a room when you walk into it and you never knew the argument happened? You just can tell. And particularly if we live in big cities and all these things, you know, we have to be careful of not taking on other people's energies. And that's a big thing. It's good to try and find the peace and the quiet for ourselves.
I got quite a good insight into, I guess, the topic of loneliness over the last 18 months. I worked for Tonic Housing. So we opened the UK's first LGBT retirement community. And that was set up to combat loneliness and isolation of older LGBT people. And it's a completely different world than anything I'd experienced before. Kind of when you would speak to people in their 60s, 70s, 80s and hear about what their friendship group is now or isn't, or who they're able to surround themselves with, or the shame that they still feel to this day. And it was so eye-opening seeing and hearing stories from so many different people and kind of seeing what loneliness actually can do to a person and make them feel. And also on the flip side, like, I was fortunate enough, I'm in a new role now, but we opened and we had our first residents move in, and like seeing the incredible difference it made to them, like having like-minded and similar people with the same life experiences like in the flat next to them, it just brought them to life, and it was so incredible.
Amazing. Yeah,
it just shows, doesn't it, like what being isolated and actually feeling and being lonely can do to a person. It's like insane.
Dampen your light. But I think that's why there's a lot to be said for also having some sort of spiritual practice. Because I think, I mean, what you're describing is something quite different and really beautiful, actually. You know, that's just so lovely to think people can, you know, towards the latter years of their life, find this companionship, and shared experience and shared ideas. And that, I think that's beautiful. It's a balance, because often we're told, you should always be able to exist just on your own. And that is true. But also, we are, you know, pack animals. We want to be with others. I don't mean necessarily on a relationship, but in relation to. And I think I encourage people to sort of have a sense of spirituality or some sort of sense of the bigger picture and the world being, you know, the other. Because that for me certainly has changed. You know, I feel like really life has kind of got me. You know, how nice to feel like someone's got your back. Mm. I mean, I'm not religious. And yet I feel like, well, the universe will kind of sort it out. If it's meant to be, it's meant to be. And there's something really nice about that. But there's also like a truism to it. Like I've experienced it time and time again. Mm. Things coming my way, which I haven't done anything for, you know. So I think remember about spirituality and remember about the bigger picture, because that's a key element, I think, to combat loneliness as well.
Mm. So speaking of the world having your back, it's been 20 years since you won Pop Idol, which we were talking before. We both remember it very well.
I wasn't born because I was so young.
I was. We used to have this ritual back in my house, again, to speak to my mum, but we'd on a weekend, we'd all get bathed or whatever, and then we'd put on our pyjamas and go downstairs, and we'd sit in front of the fire and watch whatever the night's TV is. And yeah, I just remember it very vividly. I was always in your corner. I do want to say that. But what do you remember about that day? I'm sure it was incredibly overwhelming.
It was amazing. Mm. The whole thing was amazing. Yeah, because I was getting like constant feedback to what I was doing week after week. So my confidence was growing week after week. And also it's like a dream come true. I mean, it's just astonishing. It's kind of unique. Mm-hmm. Not kind of unique, it is unique.
Yeah.
You know, to have a dream and then it starts happening. It's very surreal. But also I did really enjoy it. Yeah. And I was quite competitive, so I think I was quite focused as well.
Mm-hmm.
We had quite a laugh. I got on well with the others. I was sort of slightly the kind of fixer of the group in a way, I suppose. So people would come with their problems and, yeah, I think I just sort of became that person, which I was quite happy with. So I stayed out of any drama and just would listen to people. And then if someone was being an arsehole, I'd shut up. So I think I enjoyed having that kind of role, but we were a bit like a family, really. And it was so new as well, so no one really knew what was going to happen, so no one could manipulate it.
Yeah,
because no one was making, knew they'd make loads of money out of the show, so they couldn't manipulate people. They were just like, wow, this is happening, and we all went on this sort of journey together. Very lucky. We feel very lucky.
And I mean, as you said, it was unique because it was the first of anything kind of like that. What impact personally do you think you had, not only winning it and kind of the obvious, you know, more competitions and many more singers, but as a gay man on that platform back then and kind of all of the incredible work you've done since, how was that been for you? Like, I know it's sometimes when you're in the moment it's difficult, isn't it, to
no it's I mean, it's just so interesting to look back and just go, my god, it was so archaic then.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, scary and not very pleasant to be a gay person and a famous gay person. You know, it's vulnerable, so it's sort of weird because I think, god, we've moved on so much, so that's nice. In terms of the impact on me, I was quite fortunate that I was quite sort of forthright. I was just like, well, if I'm not going to be openly gay, I just won't be a pop star, I'm going to do something else.
Yeah.
You know, because I didn't want it. I was quite sort of like, I don't know where that came from. Just quite like, well, if people don't want to listen to my music because who I choose to love, then I don't want them to listen to my music.
Yeah.
You know, so I had a sort of confidence in that area. But as I look back on it now things have changed so much, of course, I look back and go, my God, that was really difficult and all the homophobia and everything that happened. I think I'm very proud of it, though. I'm very proud that I had the, like, strength to do it, you know. But it wasn't like it was a push in many regards. In other ways, yeah, it was really scary, very scary, an occasional you know, scary moments. But on the whole, I think it just takes moments, you know, and that was the right moment.
Give us a quick bit about your upcoming album release and tour, because your new song came out last week, the week before.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, I wrote that with two friends as a pitch for a Dua Lipa song during lockdown. And then I don't even know if they ever, she ever got to hear it, but it didn't really matter either way, because then we sort of quite liked it for ourselves. And I'm touring at the end of the year. Quite keen on this cult idea, though. I think I'm going to...
Scrap everything else.
Yeah.
So we wanted to end on a bit of a laugh and not just cut it off right after Will says he's got a tour coming up, because we ran out of time really quickly, so we just needed to kind of get a soundbite at the end for the tour and his new music. But to explain the cult joke, so basically we couldn't include it because the audio was messed up, but imagine a wellness cult dressed head to toe in Vivienne Westwood is basically what he was trying to pitch to us. Would you join? That's a question for you, listener. Not for Matthew.
Well, I thought you were. I'm not sure. I'd have to see what the current collection was. No, that's camp.
No, that's gay.
Well, honestly, thank you so much,
yes,
Will. Because, yeah, it was just so much fun chatting to you. Yeah, we've both been big fans since we were tiny little gay boys. So, yeah, one of the questions I didn't get to ask that I would have liked is how he's found, knowing that he's been that role model for people. And I know it probably, after speaking to him, it probably would have been quite an embarrassing question for him. I don't think he'd have maybe liked it, because it would have put him on the spot. But yeah, I would just say that now, that he is and has been, I know, a role model for lots of other little queers. So yeah, thanks for chatting to us, Will.
This is all your fault, Will. Look what you've done.
Look what you've created.
It was gorgeous and you looked stunning, but I also feel like I got a lot more from the interview than I was expecting. Sometimes you can meet celebrities or people of notoriety and you can only get a bit of the surface, but he was really, really open, and I was really, really grateful for that. Another thing that we should mention, which he's incredibly open about as well, is this new documentary that's coming out, or will have come out, the same week that this episode's released. I think it comes out on the 10th. So it's a documentary about his brother's suicide. So I think it's going to be on Channel 4, but really recommend everyone go watch that. I know I will be most likely bawling as well. But it's an incredibly important topic, and I think it's going to shed some much needed light on it.
So with that, we are done. That is your lot for this special Mental Health Awareness Week episode. As always, you can follow us at Bottoming Pod on Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram, obviously.
There we go. Main one. Check out our new website, bottomingpodcast.com.
Yeah,
I gave it a bit of a refresh. So have a look and give us your thoughts or whatever, and review us, please. Review us
On Spotify and Apple Podcasts, you can do both, remember, so that is very much appreciated if you did love this episode.
We're hoping to be back in a couple of months, maybe even a month, who knows,
maybe even a month. So you know, get your calendars out, we're doing some prep work for that, some production, BTS production, so bear with us. Bear with us, and we will
keep you updated.
See you very soon.
Don't forget,
you are doing amazing, sweeties.
Bye.